Chapter 20. Thus far we have a part of Mrs. Eddy's portrait. Not made of fictions, surmises, reports, rumors, innuendos, dropped by her enemies. No, she has furnished all of the materials herself, and laid them on the canvas, under my general superintendence and direction. As far as S.E. has gone with it, it is the presentation of a complacent, commonplace, illiterate New England woman who orchid everything she knew when she discovered her discovery, then wrote a Bible in good English under the inspiration of God, and climbed up it to the supremest summit of earthly grandeur attainable by man, where she sits serene today, beloved and worshipped by a multitude of human beings of as good average intelligence as is possessed by those that march under the banner of any competing cult. This is not intended to flatter the competing cults, it is merely a statement of cold fact. That a commonplace person should go climbing aloft, and become a god or a half-god or a quarter-god, and be worshipped by men and women of average intelligence, is nothing. It has happened a million times, it will happen 100 million more. It has been millions of years since the first of these supernaturals appeared, and by the time the last one in that inconceivably remote future shall have performed his solemn little hijinks on the stage, and closed the business, there will be enough of them accumulated in the museum on the other side, to start a heaven of their own and jam it. Each in his turn those little supernaturals of our bygone ages and eons joined the monster procession of his predecessors and marched horizonward, disappeared, and was forgotten. They changed nothing, they built nothing, they left nothing behind them to remember them by, nothing to hold their disciples together, nothing to solidify their work and enable it to defy the assaults of time and the weather. They passed and left a vacancy. They made one fatal mistake, they all made it, each in his turn. They failed to organize their forces, they failed to centralize their strength, they failed to provide a fresh Bible and a sure and perpetual cash income for business, and often they failed to provide a new and accepted divine personage to worship. Mrs. Eddy is not of that small fry. The materials that go to the making of the rest of her portrait will prove it. She will furnish them herself. She published her book. She copyrighted it. She copyrights everything. If she should say, "Good morning, how do you do?" she would copyright it, for she is a careful person, and knows the value of small things. She began to teach her science, she began to heal, she began to gather converts to her new religion, fervent, sincere, devoted, grateful people. A year or two later she organized her first Christian Science Association, with 6 of her disciples on the roster. She continued to teach and heal. She was charging nothing, she says, although she was very poor. She taught and healed gratis 4 years altogether, she says. Then, in 1879-81 she was become strong enough, and well enough established, to venture a couple of impressively important moves. The first of these moves was to aggrandize the association to a church. Brave? It is the right name for it, I think. The former name suggests nothing, invited no remark, no criticism, no inquiry, no hostility. The new name invited them all. She must have made this intrepid venture on her own motion. She could have had no important advisors at that early day. If we accept it as her own idea and her own act, and I think we must, we have one key to her character. And it will explain subsequent acts of hers that would merely stun us, and stupefy us without it. Shall we call it courage? Or shall we call it recklessness? Courage observes, reflects, calculates, surveys the whole situation, counts the cost, estimates the odds, makes up its mind. Then goes at the enterprise resolute to win or perish. Recklessness does not reflect, it plunges fearlessly in with a hurrah, and takes the risks, whatever they may be, regardless of expense. Recklessness often fails. Mrs. Eddy has never failed from the point of view of her followers. The point of view of other people is naturally not a matter of weighty importance to her. The new church was not born loose-jointed and featureless, but had a defined plan, a definite character, definite aims, and a name which was a challenge, and defied all comers. It was mind-healing church. It was without a creed. Its name, the Church of Christ, Scientist. Mrs. Eddy could not copyright her church, but she chartered it, which was the same thing, and relieved the pain. It had 26 charter members. Mrs. Eddy was at once installed as its pastor. The other venture, above referred to, was Mrs. Eddy's Massachusetts Metaphysical College, in which was taught the pathology of spiritual power. She could not copyright it, but she got it chartered. For faculty it had herself, her husband of the period, Dr. Eddy, and her adopted son, Dr. Foster Eddy. The college term was early 3 weeks, she says. Again she was bold, brave, rash, reckless. Choose for yourself, for she not only began to charge the student, but charged him $100 a week for the enlightenments. And got it? Some may ask. Easily. Pupils flocked from far and near. They came by the hundred. Presently the term was cut down nearly half, but the price remained as before. To be exact, the term cut was to 7 lessons, price, $300. The college yielded a large income. This is believable. In 7 years Mrs. Eddy taught, as she avers, over 4,000 students in it. Preface to 1902 edition of Science and Health. 300 times 4,000 is but perhaps you can cipher it yourself. I could do it ordinarily, but I fell down yesterday and hurt my leg. Cipher it, you will see that it is a grand sum for a woman to earn in 7 years. Yet that was not all she got out of her college in the 7. At the time that she was charging the primary student $300 for 12 lessons, she was not content with this tidy assessment, but had other ways of plundering him. By advertisement she offered him privileges whereby he could add 18 lessons to his store for $500 more. That is to say, he could get a total of 30 lessons in her college for $800. 4,000 times 800 is but it is a difficult sum for a cripple who has not been demonstrated over to cipher. Let it go. She taught for 4,000 students in 7 years. Ver is not definite, but it probably represents a non-paying surplus of learners over and above the paying 4,000. Charity students. Doubtless. I think that as interesting an advertisement as has been printed since the romantic old days of the other buccaneers is this one from the Christian Science Journal for September, 1886. Massachusetts Metaphysical College, Rev. Mary Baker G. Eddy, President, 571 Columbus Avenue, Boston. The collegiate course in Christian Science Metaphysical Healing includes 12 lessons. Tuition, $300. Course in Metaphysical Obstetrics includes 6 daily lectures, and is open only to students from this college. Tuition, $100. Class in Theology, open, like the above, to graduates, receives 6 additional lectures on the Scriptures, and summary of the principle and practice of Christian Science, $200. Normal classes open to those who have taken the first course at this college. 6 daily lectures complete the normal course. Tuition, $200. No invalids, and only persons of good moral character, are accepted as students. All students are subject to examination and rejection, and they are liable to leave the class if found unfit to remain in it. A limited number of clergymen received free of charge. Largest discount to indigent students, $100 on the first course. No deduction on the others. Husband and wife, entered together, $300. Tuition for all strictly in advance. There it is, the horse leech's daughter alive again, after a 3-century vacation. 50 or 60 hours lecturing for $800. I was in error, as to one matter. There are no charity students. Gratis-taught clergymen must not be placed under that head, They are merely an advertisement. Pauper students can get into the infant class on a 2/3 rate, cash in advance, but not even an archangel can get into the rest of the game with anything short of par, cash down. For it is in the spirit of Christ's charity, as one who is joyful, to bear healing to the sick, that Mrs. Eddy is working the game. She sends the healing to them outside. She cannot bear it to them inside the college, for the reason that she does not allow a sick candidate to get in. It is true that this smells of inconsistency, but that is nothing. Mrs. Eddy would not be Mrs. Eddy if she should ever chance to be consistent about anything 2 days running. Except in the matter of the dollar. The dollar, and appetite for power and notoriety. English must also be added. She is always consistent. She is always Mrs. Eddy, in her English. It is always and consistently confused and crippled and poor. She wrote the advertisement. Her literary trademarks are there. When she says all students are subject to examination, she does not mean students. She means candidates for that lofty place when she says students are liable to leave the class, if found unfit to remain in it. She does not mean that, if they find themselves unfit, or be found unfit by others, they will be likely to ask permission to leave the class. She means that if she finds them unfit, she will be liable to fire them out. When she nobly offers tuition for all strictly in advance, she does not mean instruction for all in advance payment for it later. No, that is only what she says, it is not what she means. If as he had written science and health, the oldest man in the world would not be able to tell with certainty what any passage in it was intended to mean. Her church was on its legs. She was its pastor. It was prospering. She was appointed one of a committee to draft bylaws for its government. It may be observed, without overplus of irreverence, that this was larks for her. She did all of the drafting herself. From the very beginning she was always in the front seat, when there was business to be done, in the front seat, with both eyes open, and looking sharply out for number one, in the front seat, working mortal mind with fine effectiveness and giving immortal mind a rest for Sunday. When her church was reorganized, by and by, the bylaws were attained. She saw to that. In these laws for the government of her church, her empire, her despotism, Mrs. Eddy's character is embalmed for good and all. I think a particularized examination of these church laws will be found interesting. And not the less so, if we keep in mind that they were impelled by a power not one's own, as she says, Angelus, the inspiration of God. It is a church without a creed. Still, it has one. Mrs. Eddy drafted it and copyrighted it. In her own name. You cannot become a member of the Mother Church, nor of any Christian Science Church, without signing it. It forms the first chapter of the bylaws, and is called Tenets. Tenets of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ, Scientist. It has no hell in it, it throws it overboard. The pastor emeritus, about the time of the reorganization, Mrs. Eddy retired from her position of pastor of her church, abolished the office of pastor in all branch churches, and appointed her book, Science and Health, to be pastor-universal. Mrs. Eddy did not disconnect herself from the office entirely when she retired, but appointed herself pastor emeritus. It is a misleading title, and belongs to the family of that phrase, without a creed. It advertises her as being a merely honorary official, with nothing to do, and no authority. The Tsar of Russia is Emperor Emeritus on the same terms. Mrs. Eddy was autocrat of the church before, with limitless authority, and she kept her grip on that limitless authority when she took that fictitious title. It is curious and interesting to note with what an unerring instinct the pastor emeritus has thought out and forecast all possible encroachments upon her planned autocracy, and barred the way against them in the bylaws which he framed and copyrighted under the guidance of the Supreme Being. The board of directors, for instance, when Article 1, speaks of a president and board of directors. You think you have discovered a formidable check upon the powers and ambitions of the honorary pastor, the ornamental pastor, the functionless pastor, the pastor emeritus. But it is a mistake. These great officials are of the phrase family of the church without a creed, and the pastor with nothing to do. That is to say, of the family of large names which mean nothing. The board is of so little consequence that the bylaws do not state how it is chosen, nor who does it. But they do state, most definitely, that the board cannot fill a vacancy in its number except the candidate is approved by the pastor emeritus. The candidate. The board cannot even proceed to an election until the pastor emeritus has examined the list and squelched such candidates as are not satisfactory to her. Whether the original first board began as the personal property of Mrs. Eddy or not, it is foreseeable that in time, under this bylaw, she would own it. Such a first board might chafe under such a rule as that, and try to legislate it out of existence someday. But Mrs. Eddy was awake. She foresaw that danger, and added this ingenious and effective clause. This bylaw can neither be amended nor annulled, except by consent of Mrs. Eddy, the pastor emeritus, the president, the board of directors, or serfs, or ciphers, elects the president. On these clearly worded terms, colon subject to the approval of the pastor emeritus. Therefore she elects him. A long term can invest a high official with influence and power, and make him dangerous. Mrs. Eddy reflected upon that, so she limits the president's term to a year. As he has a capable commercial head, an organizing head, a head for government. Treasurer and clerk. There are a treasurer and a clerk. They are elected by the board of directors. That is to say, by Mrs. Eddy. Their terms of office expire on the first Tuesday in June of each year, or upon the election of their successors. They must be watchfully obedient and satisfactory to her, or she will elect and install their successors with a suddenness that can be unpleasant to them. It goes without saying that the treasurer manages the treasury to suit Mrs. Eddy, and is in fact merely temporary deputy treasurer. Apparently the clerk has but two duties to perform. To read messages from Mrs. Eddy to first members assembled in solemn council, and provide lists. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.